I'd like to call this meeting of the House Resources Committee to order. Today is Valentine's Day, in case you missed that. It was February 14th, 2024. We are in Capitol Room 124. We have with us today Representative Sadler, Representative Baker, Representative Rauscher, Representative McCabe, Representative Dibert, Representative Armstrong, and Representative Mears, and myself, Chairman Tom McKay. Representative Wright has been excused due to illness. Let's see. We have with us Deputy Commissioner Goodrum today. And I'd like to thank the staff. We have a quorum, by the way. We have a quorum to do business. And I'd like to thank the staff, Zach, Justin, and Ed, as they always do an excellent job keeping our meetings running smooth. I'd like to remind everyone, especially the new folks, to please put your cell phones on silent. That way we're not distracted. Thank you. And we'll now start the meeting. We have two items on the agenda today. House Bill 296, better known as the Crop Bill. And then we will be having a presentation from the Food Strategy Task Force. So first up, House Bill 296, the Crop Act. I bring the bill back before the committee. And we will now open for public testimony on House Bill 296. So first of all, is there anyone in the room that wants to testify on House Bill 296? Sir? Okay, please come forward and state your name and your affiliation and begin your testimony.
Mr. Chairman and committee, my name is Scott Magrich. I'm president of the Alaska Farm Bureau. I'm from Delta Junction, Alaska, where I own a beef cattle ranch and raise most of my own feed. I want to testify today about House Bill 296, and I want to offer Farm Bureau's support and kudos for bringing this this bill and what its content is to the attention, and I'm glad to see movement in this direction for agriculture and the support. I do have, though, a couple of concerns. I just want to point out possibly down at some point, the crop insurance side of it is focused primarily just on the grain production in Alaska, which would be pretty much oats. The insurable crops that are federally insurable crops would be barley, oats, peas, and that's your basic feed grains that we produce here. We think that in this year's, it was supposed to be last year's Farm Bill, National Farm Bill, we're going to see some expansion in the federal crop insurance program, and that expansion is going to offer a better crop insurance to specialty crops, which fit our state more broadly. We've got vegetable production, stuff like that that is currently not, but so I would like to see some kind of a segue where we can include that in the future if that comes to fruition in the Farm Bill. And I would assure you there's going to be some of those changes made to the Farm Bill. And as I am on the board of directors for the American Farm Bureau, I know we're working diligently to get those things in. We just want to make sure we don't leave out any of agriculture food production in this state, you know, and overlook them. Even though I am one of the few that would reap the benefits of that the crop insurance portion, I do grow barley and oats and peas, so I'm one of the few benefactors of that. I still like to see it more broadened later on. So, the other concern that I really have, and I don't want to speak just for myself. I represent the Farm Bureau and the farmers all over this state. But the other concern we have is with the product preference portion of the bill. We've worked on that product preference for years, ever since I've been coming down to Juneau and representing Farm Bureau. We've been after that, and it's still not used like it's supposed to be. And so I'd like to see that we get this right in this bill, because this is pretty much saying, institutions, you have to use this. You have to give preference to local food products. But it looks to me like maybe in this it's not identified or plain or spelled out completely, but it looks like if a wholesaler is carrying an Alaska-grown product when he makes a bid, it says his bid will be accepted because he has Alaska-grown product. Does that mean the price of the non-Alaska-grown products is not looked at? You know, if his bid is to be accepted because of, you know, just one, I think there needs to be some clarity and wording and stuff there that concerns us. And no offense to what's going on with the bill, but we'd like to clean some of those things up. You know, we need something a little stronger in there that says that those wholesalers need to do business with local farmers. Because that's not what's not happening. And there, you know, it needs to be some cohesive, consistent, effort made to connect those wholesalers and farmers together, those wholesale distributors. And I refer to them as like Sysco and US Foods and that type of thing. And with the understanding that the institutions want to buy all their grocery lists from one place. And so what needs to transpire is those negotiations need to be between the wholesalers and the farmers. And farmers are not salesmen. They know how to grow things and they have dirt under their fingernails and they don't need to be salesmen in this regard. And that is, we'll hear more about some of that later on, I think, in testimony as well. And then lastly, the pilot project is for 5 years. I think that might be a little too short a term for a lot of agriculture development. If you're going to scale up maybe to service one of these wholesalers, you're talking about a much wider net you're going to be throwing, and it takes time to scale up and ag, whether it be land or finance or whatever you're needing to get to. With that, I'll take any questions you might have.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Mugrage. I would like to recognize that Senator Shelley Hughes has joined us back there. I didn't quite see you. Thank you, Senator, for being here. So we have a question first, Representative Rauscher.
Yep, thank you, through the chair. Mr. Mugrage, I was wondering, you said 5 years was not the right length of time. Do you have a suggestion?
Well, if I'm going to throw something out there through the chair, maybe somewhere in that 7 to 10 range. We applaud everything that's being done here. We just want to fine tune it and get it right.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. And then Representative Sadler, question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. President, Farm Bureau Association, the product preference right now is a 7% cap, and the bill is drafted now has a cap of infinity. In your opinion, is there some percentage of price support or some price product preference cap between 7% and unlimited that might be effective enough?
And through the chair, sir, the 7% cap, and I'm a farmer by heart too, so, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but there's actually 15% is eligible on individual crops.
May.
Well, that's another area of focus that maybe needs to be clarified. We're in agreement to having a cap. You know, I don't think it needs to be wide open by any means. And wherever that cap is thought by the state or the legislature, that would be fine with us.
Oh, thank you.
Okay. I think I saw a hand over here. No? Okay. Any other questions for Mr. Mugrage? Let me say that anybody that ranches and farms in Alaska has my tremendous respect because it's not an easy place to do that. So we thank you for being here, Mr. Mugrage. Thank you for your testimony. And you pointed out some issues. I would point out that the amendment deadline for the bill is Thursday, February 22nd at 5 p.m. So if there's anything you want to see changed, you could submit an amendment or have one of our one of our members submitted an amendment on your behalf. I believe that's how that would work.
I think we'll be working toward that.
Okay. Before we go to the presentations, Mr. Goodrum, do you have any comment on anything you just heard? Or? Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. So I'll set aside House Bill 296. Brief at ease. Okay, well, I beg your pardon. We were on public testimony. Is there anyone else in the room that would like to testify? Okay, please come forward and state your name and your affiliation and begin your testimony. Sorry about the hitch.
Hi, my name is Robbie Mixon. I'm here from Homer, Alaska, and I'm the executive director of the Alaska Food Policy Council. On behalf of AFPC, I want to thank Governor Dunleavy and Deputy Commissioner Goodrum and Director Scoresby for their efforts on the Crop Act and dedication to improving Alaska's agriculture. We love to see this Crop Act come out, but also, like the Farm Bureau, have several recommendations to make it stronger and work better for our farmers. Let's see. On the capital access, we recommend further expanding the loan eligibility to include food processors and manufacturers, as recommended by the Food Strategy Task Force in their August 2023 report. We also strongly encourage the legislature to capitalize the Agriculture Forgivable Loan Program. This will allow DNR to draft the necessary regulations around this important new program to get it off the ground. Finally, in this section, we strongly encourage the Division of Agriculture to explore ways to engage the Board of Ag as necessary first step to increasing their participation in decision-making prior to reducing the quorum needed to conduct business. In regards to crop insurance, we're concerned with the limitations of these provisions to barley, wheat, and oats. While these are important agricultural crops, the USDA Risk Management is actively working to expand crop insurance subsidies to other areas like specialty crops. So we're hoping there's a provision in there that will allow specialty crops to be covered as well. Like when I say specialty crops, that's fruits, vegetables, things like that. Additionally, improving Alaska's procurement laws to expand state purchases is a common recommendation of nearly every planning effort and food security plan to date. We support and applaud the intention to in the open procurement section, but to be successful, we believe this section of the Crop Act requires significantly more planning before it being enacted. A quote from this topic from the governor's task report reads, "A concerted effort with accompanying resources is required to expand production that is linked with institutional purchasing needs. As an example, the Anchorage School District will need 400 pounds of green beans for a school year. A facilitator or broker would need to communicate this." So some coordination between purchasing and so end user from farmer. We also fully support the points raised by Scott. And at a minimum, we recommend delaying the implementation of these procurement sections to July 2025, and in the interim, spending resources to engage farmers, wholesalers, and procurement officers so they can be ready for this procurement change. So thank you for the chance to testify, and we remain optimistic and support all your efforts. And like Scott said, we like what's happening. We just want to get it right so it works for the type of farming and buyers that we have right now in Alaska.
Okay, and give me your name one more time.
Robbie Mixon.
Robbie, I was just seeing it. Okay, Robbie. Okay, thank you, Robbie. Any questions for Robbie? None? Okay. Thank you, Robbie, for your testimony. Is there anyone else in the room wishing to testify on HB 296? Don't want to miss anybody. I got in trouble last time. Okay. All right. It looks like nobody raised their hand. So is there anyone online that would like to testify? Which one? Where are we? Shannon? Oh, three here. Okay. Okay, we have three online. Shannon Carroll, can you hear me okay?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Okay, please state your name and your affiliation, and let's give you 3 minutes to testify, okay?
Great, thanks, Mr. Chair. My name is Shannon Carroll. I'm calling in from my home today in Anchorage on behalf of Trident Seafoods to testify in support of HB 296. Trident supports this bill because we strongly align ourselves with the bill's intent, which is to put more Alaska products, especially seafood products, into the hands and mouths of Alaskans. As most of you know, a culmination of unprecedented economic conditions in 2023 sent shockwaves through the seafood industry and fishing-dependent communities, and these impacts are still playing out today as market and cost trends point to continued erosion of Alaska's competitive position in global seafood markets. We sincerely appreciate the governor introducing HB 296 as it seeks to address one of the core issues affecting our sector, which is excess inventory caused in part by increased supply and competition with Russian harvested seafood. HB 296 will make it easier for the state and public entities to purchase Alaska seafood, which will help reduce inventory and in turn lower costs for our industry. Lowering costs for our industry helps fishing dependent businesses as well as Alaska communities that depend on fishery landing tax revenue. And we also believe that this bill will help improve Alaska food security by strengthening in-state supply chains through the purchase of Alaska seafood. I appreciate the opportunity to testify today, and I'm happy to take any questions if there are any. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Carroll. We have a question, Representative Mears.
Thank you, through the chair. Thank you, Mr. Carroll, for calling in. We were just got some testimony about delayed implementation for the procurement section. Would that affect you to wait another year, or is that something that you'd like to see implemented sooner rather than later?
Thank you for the question, through the chair. At this time, we don't have any recommendations for changes to the bill. We certainly could use the help on the inventory sooner than later, but I also recognize that this will have a significant impact on farmers in the state, so we'd be happy to serve as a resource if there's sort of questions for amendments moving forward. But at this time, we don't have any changes to the bill that we would like to see.
Okay. Any other questions for Mr. Carroll? Okay, seeing none, thank you, Mr. Carroll, for your testimony. I really appreciate it. Okay, Mr. Adam Jensky, can you hear me, Adam? Adam Jensky? Okay. How about Ben Adams? Ben Adams, can you hear me?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, Ben. Please state your name and your affiliation and begin your testimony. You have 3 minutes, please.
Yes, sir. Well, my name is Ben Adams. I'm a farmer and a rancher in Soldotna. For the last 25 years or so, I've also been a licensed attorney. I gave that up about 4 years ago to start farming in Alaska. And I got to tell you, folks, I've been horrified at a lot of the obstacles that have been placed in front of me as a new farmer by the state. I tell everyone who will listen that my two biggest challenges and enemies are the climate and the state and the politicians. And I don't say that to be confrontational. I'm just saying that there are a lot of things that could be done to make farming from a legal point of view in this state much more possible. So I'm thrilled to see the legislature take on some of those challenges in this session through some of the House and Senate bills that have been presented, including 296. My concern on this, and maybe this has been brought up before and maybe it hasn't in the, I apologize if I'm joining the party late, is when it comes to the procurement part of this bill, there to me at least seems to be a confusing conflict between Section 17 and Section 18. And maybe it's clear to you folks or to the drafters, and it might be clear to the folks who would do the purchasing for the state, but as somebody that practiced law for decades, I don't know what it means. If you look at Section 17, and if you stop right there, we'll talk about a game changer for farmers and ranchers. I mean, if the state has to purchase agricultural products that were purchased here. I mean, wow. I mean, the smoke starts coming out of the stacks. I mean, kudos to you guys. Let's go. But when you look at Section 18, it talks about a preference between 7 and 15%. And I don't know what that means. And I think that needs to be clarified, because does that mean a preference between me and other producers that are in state? Or does that mean a preference between me and outside producers? Because if it's the latter, then the whole thing is useless. Because I can tell you, as a farmer and a rancher in Alaska, there's absolutely no chance I could get within 7% of the cost of outside food. I mean, I put 175 cattle through the winter, guys, and I can't tell you how many hours. I work 80 hours a week minimum just trying to keep my cattle alive. The expense of doing that here is nothing if compared to farmers in Texas or Louisiana or Florida. And I'm proud to be an Alaskan farmer, but I can't match those prices. So that to me is a concern in this bill. I just don't know what it means. And if you and if other people do, that's great. But if what you're trying to do is have a clear bill that will encourage farmers to start production, and you're going to encourage the state and the schools and the prisons and everyone else to buy our products, then that really needs to be clarified, in my opinion. So other than that, I'm thankful that the legislature is taking food security a little bit more seriously. There's a lot of things you guys can do to really get the smoke coming out of the stacks, and this is one of those things, and I appreciate your time and listening to me.
Okay, thank you, Ben. We appreciate that testimony, and we'll try to get an answer for you on your primary question. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I may venture to the question, that kind of confused me too. The answer to your question is Section 17, it takes effect in 2024, and Section 18 would take effect 5 years later, 2029. So essentially, there's the one provision with no cap would be there for 5 years, and then after 5 years, there'd be a 7 to 15%. Just take a look at Sections 28 and 29 of the bill. That should answer your questions about the seeming contradiction. I don't speak for the sponsor, but I just had the same question myself. That's the answer I came up with.
Okay, I see Mr.
Got it. Thank you.
I see Mr. Goodrum nodding, so that must mean that you are correct, Mr. Sadler. Anybody else? Question for Representative Mears for Mr. Adams?
Just a clarification for him, if okay. I may. So, Mr. Adams, that's reverting back to the language as it is now. So it's at the moment, it's a five-year program.
Yeah. Right. I understand that now. I missed that. I spent all morning trying to figure out the conflict between the sections, and I didn't read far enough, so I sure appreciate that clarification. If that's the case, then please pass this bill. I cannot tell you what a difference it will make to us farmers and ranchers. Go, go, go.
Go, go, go. Okay, we will. We will, Mr. Adams. Thank you for your coaching today. Any other questions for Mr. Adams? Okay. Let's see. That takes care of all the... Oh, he's back? Okay, Mangini. Nick Mangini. I'm sorry. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay.
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah. So, Mr. Mangini, please state your name and your affiliation and begin your three-minute testimony, please.
Okay. Hi, my name is Nick Mangini. I am the Mariculture Director for Southwest Alaska Municipal Conference. I'm also one of Alaska's first kelp farmers, and I've been farming kelp since 2016. We strongly support the 296 for a number of reasons. Outside of food security, that would be taken care of by kelp for human consumption. I think that there's a number of things that kelp and oysters or mariculture in general can do for the waters that surround it, including slow down ocean acidification and slow the warming of the waters and really keep us, keep the food security alive and well in Alaska that's already here. You know, there's a really strong case of how well these farms remediate both of those things, warming waters and acidification. There's a number of things that this would do to help us as well, supply the university with some research funds, which is always really important. They're doing some pretty big projects around soil amendments, and if you start amending the soil, then that goes right back to the farmers. Livestock feed has also been another very big project we've been a part of, and there's some really promising results coming out of that. Biostimulants, and just the fact that You know, most of our native and rural communities have been dependent on kelp for some source of food for time immemorial. So that's all that I have, and I appreciate your guys' time and encourage you to pass this bill.
Okay, Mr. Mangini, any questions for Mr. Mangini? All right, seeing none, thank you for your testimony, Nick. And now we'll go to, is there anyone else on the line or in the room that wants to testify? Going once, going twice. All right. So I will now close public testimony on House Bill 296. And we will hold the bill in committee. And again, as I mentioned earlier, the amendment deadline is Thursday, February 22nd at 5 p.m. Beg your pardon. So now we will have a presentation from the Alaska Food Strategies Task Force. And I believe it's Senator Hughes will be making the presentation. Is that correct? Okay. If you would come to the table, and we'll get your names on the record, and we can begin your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Shelley Hughes from Senate District M in Palmer, and I really appreciate you cutting out the time for this, especially when we have so many food and agricultural advocates in the building. It's a great week to be doing it. And today, I was honored to chair the Food Strategy Task Force, and so we're going to have several presenters, and then we have some testimony at the end. And we're going to try to be really brief in what we do. We're not going to read every slide, but we're going to try to move through because we want to have time for the boots on the ground, the folks where we got a lot of these recommendations and who are out there doing it. And with me at the table is Mike Jones, PhD with ICER, and then Jody Anderson with the University of Alaska, and she can tell you the name of her institute, which is really long. And we will take turns. One of the things I would like permission, Mr. Chair, if I may, is Dr. Jones is going to go through the first, about third of the presentation. And with your permission, I'd like to be able to add in. And I think the recording secretary probably can tell the man's voice from the woman's voice. But if I need to state my name when that happens, I am happy to do so. But at this time, I'd like to hand it over to Dr. Jones.
Okay, and I'll just point out we have about an hour. Now we have to stop hard at 3 o'clock. So maybe try to budget your time accordingly. Thank you. So please begin your presentation, Dr. Jones. Indiana.
You take that one.
Great. Thank you so much for hosting us. It's been a pleasure to see so many familiar faces here that have been instrumental within the task force and in supporting ag and food systems in the state. I approach you not as an ICER researcher here, but really I've been given the honor of speaking on behalf of the 36 members of the Food Strategy Task Force. And I'll be conveying strategies and recommendations designed by specific focus area committees or added within the broader body's deliberations.
Good afternoon. My name is Jody Anderson. I'm with the University of Alaska Fairbanks Institute of Agriculture, Natural Resources, and Extension. It is a mouthful. I apologize. I do want to just give you a little bit of history about this this current work. We started this. The governor's office reached out to UAF and asked if we could help pull together the report of this initial task force that was pulled together. I was able to very quickly move into an area and work with a group that I knew understood the food system in Alaska, the situation we're in, and that's the Alaska Food Policy Council. And so with collaboration with the Alaska Food Policy Council, we were able to pull together the initial task force report. That was published, and thank you. And so the idea was to use the initial task force, the Food Security and Independence Task Force report, to then feed into and make recommendations and move toward the Alaska Food Strategy Task Force. And so the initial report on food security and independence laid the groundwork that moved into the work that is being done currently and is still, and we will continue to do work with the new task force. Thank you.
Thank you. So this current task force has several main objectives laid out in statute with the goal of improving statewide food security. We're designing recommendations to direct a statewide food strategy, one that strengthens our ability to produce, gather, market, and move food around our complex and diverse food system. The focus areas are split by year to allow maximum committee participation. My overview here will delve into the 2023 committee's recommendations, focusing on building the ag industry, growing local markets for the products that we grow, and facilitating movement through very complex and critical supply chains in the Transport and Infrastructure Committee. So these discussions are guided by a diverse executive board that cuts across the political spectrum, the public sector, the university, the private sector as well. That includes Senate members Shelley Hughes and Jesse Bjorkman, and also House members George Rauscher, hello to Representative Rauscher, and Donna Mears, hello Representative Mears. I do sit on this executive committee as well as along with some other talented colleagues. Now the rest of the task force members include high-level commissioners, deputy commissioners, university faculty, farmers, rural grocery retailers, and other ag and food leaders. It's been a phenomenal group to work with. I've learned quite a bit. We've also had, we've also had support from legislative aides as well as critical guidance from Amy Seitz, Robbie Mixon, and help from Lunya Oriole in report writing and Vanessa Collier at ICER with data work. It's been sincerely appreciated and beneficial to the process.
And I'd like to interject, this is Shelley Hughes, I'd like to interject that this was a legislative task force put through by statute with $0 of funding. So this support and everyone involved, it's all been of their own goodwill with no compensation of any sort. So I believe they deserve an extra bit of thanks because of that. It's very different than other task force, especially the governor's ones. And by the way, you do have the report also. It's been provided to you.
No, thank you. That's really important. And the report in front of you will be useful as we move through the meat of it now. So I certainly won't insult your ability to read by listing things off the slides, but these five recommendations represent the top priorities of the Ag Committee. Now, the new data was just released yesterday in the 2022 Census of Agriculture by the National Ag Statistical Service of the USDA. That is considered the most authoritative data on ag in the country. It's the reference for everyone. We officially have 1,172 farmers in Alaska that have annual sales of ag products over $1,000. We're one of the only states where that number is increasing, and it's quite the growth trajectory. 10 years ago in 2012, we had 762 farmers, then up to 990, and now up almost to 1,200. That's real momentum. We've also seen growth in total farmland from 2012 to 17, now again from 17 to 22. We want to support that momentum for these growers who face a very difficult climate, sourcing inputs affordably through barge, rail, trucking, and aircraft, and difficulty accessing markets even within the state. There was broad support in the task force to increase institutional support for these farmers through upgrading the Division of Ag to a Department of Ag, and coupling that with boosting our state's major research bodies and their ability to design cutting-edge varieties, for example, that work in a challenging climate. Also expanding land options for ag producers, reducing tax burdens, and increasing critical, critical access to capital.
And before we move to the next slide, I want to point out these recommendations are not in priority order. There's 18 of them. So you're seeing the first five, except there is one exception. Number one on this list was number one priority of the task force because by creating a task force, it will help all the other ones' recommendations come to pass. And so today on Valentine's, February 14th, 2024, we are debuting our white paper on that, and you've received a copy of that as well. So we don't have time to go through that, but it's important that we start that conversation, and I want to thank the Division of Ag and the Department of Natural Resources. They've been very helpful And it, with this suggestion and in conversations with the governor, it's pretty positive as far as that goes. It's going to be a process, but we want you to take that opportunity because that's a conversation that we need to have. If we are truly committed to being less dependent on the lower 48 and ensuring that if the supply chain is cut off that we are in better position, this is going to be a very pivotal step. So the rest of the recommendations are not in any priority order, but that is number one for the task force.
Thank you. Senator Hughes. It's Food Security Week, and Alaska producers are hungry. They're hungry to expand their marketing options, shorten our state supply chains, and feed the state. That's a tough prospect right now due to many diverse bottlenecks, but local markets committee folks think we really have some tangible options. The task force would like to boost marketing support through a formal ag-grown or AK-grown marketing institute that expands on the current program to build on components of the successful Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute. And a technical assistance officer can also provide dedicated support to help funnel huge amounts of federal dollars, honestly, so much federal money, that is just really hard to find. You need boots on the ground. You need the labor to be able to apply for these grants. And that FTE is argued to pay for itself quite easily. Increased access to capital is always a theme in U.S. agriculture and global agriculture, and it's no different here in every state. And the committee is recommending expanding that revolving loan fund. Now, we face a real challenge increasing Alaska-grown product representation in our large grocery outlets that are a primary target for folks. Outside of some of the largest and most organized growers, production is highly seasonal in the state. Storage of perishables is, frankly, really tough. So we want to work with retailers in an organized way to understand what their biggest constraints are, how to organize small groups to meet minimum volumes, and how to navigate less conventional structures to potentially sourcing seasonal produce in a way that folks aren't necessarily used to doing. This is a conversation worth having. Now, once ag products are grown, whether it's within the state or outside the state, everything has to navigate complicated supply chains in the state. And they are arguably more complex than any other state in the country. Alaska's just different. And the solutions must match the diversity of that challenge. I don't have time to hit everything, but some highlights here are certainly the critical maritime infrastructure, particularly in Anchorage, that's likely one of the most important square miles in the state. Now, we support ongoing measures to ensure reliability and improve throughput through those systems, and also ensuring we have redundancy in our ports to avoid a very grave situation if a natural disaster does hit that forces an extended closure. A large majority of Alaskan communities and over 20% of the population, they live off the core road system. You know this, but man, that is news to many folks outside the state. Food moves through these complicated aviation supply chains through a series of Part 121 mainline carriers, Part 135 bush carriers. Well, they rely on state DOT airport assets like runway maintenance, FAA-maintained assets like weather stations to authorize takeoffs in tough visibility conditions. Data I've analyzed show about 1 in 3 of these AWAS weather stations in Alaska are out in some way on any given day. That's much higher than in the lower 48. We've also traveled to Bethel, Kotzebue, and Ted Stevens on task force field trips, which have been fun. I've been able to lead some of those. We've had some attendance within this group to see and hear firsthand about a lack of particularly refrigerative chill assets among carriers. Data from the AC stores that I've analyzed for the task force show that in 2022 alone, there were 360,000 servings of fresh fruits and vegetables that were just simply rotten when they arrived at AC stores. Just went straight to the dump. That's just AC stores, just in 1 year. Task force urges us to do better in protecting our fresh food to rural communities and ensure that food availability and affordability is achieved. There's momentum here, and we want to capitalize on that. Now, we have to be able to measure, economically justify, track, and measure key sector statistics here. That's harder than some of us thought, and it's harder than it's going to be a tough challenge. We've all likely heard that the statistic that 95% of the food we buy comes from outside the state. We've done some digging, found some reports that have traced that back actually to a 1977 speech by a UAF dean, and it's just kind of been repeated over time. It's probably really, really high. That doesn't necessarily specify 95% of dollars, 95% of the weight, 95% of the calories. not an obvious way to track this over time, although the USDA does track estimates of dollars we spend on food at home that could be the denominator. But folks, regardless, I'm comfortable saying that number is very high, and we face a tougher, more vulnerable supply chain situation than almost any other state. You have a small state like Rhode Island, you have a small state like Connecticut, Massachusetts, they don't grow a lot of the food that they're buying either. Even Iowa doesn't grow a lot of food that they're buying. We are connected with the rest of the world in a very different, more vulnerable way, and we have to be able to think about how to protect ourselves in those vulnerabilities. Okay, so thank you so much for your time. And I encourage us to be thinking of this as a systems-based approach, as we're saying, because this is quite a systems-based challenge with a lot of actors involved, and we thank you.
And thank you, Dr. Jones, and we're thankful to have him aboard because he is going to know where you start, and so you can know how you make progress, and he is very committed to tracking that data to help us know how successful we are in this effort. So, now it's on all of us, those of us who are policymakers. I want to make a special thanks to Representative Mears and Representative Rauscher, who've also, not only are they with Senator Bjorkman on the task force, but they've also been very active in our Food and Farm Caucus, which I invite you all to join and participate in with us. But now that we've heard these different things, you've had 18 recommendations. You have some choices, and of course we have to use a little play on words here about planting, but you've got a handful of seeds, and I'm excited. Everything that is checkmarked, we're going to look at the 18 recommendations and the ones that are now in one of the bills before you, including HB 296 you just heard. They are in something that is before us in bill form at present. We can expand each of those. We can make some amendments, but they are. So the establishment of the Department of Agriculture, I'm sorry, that one is not. That's a mistake. That's my mistake. I put that check mark. Sorry about that. But 2, 3, 4, and 5 are in present bills. Under our second focus area, we have 3 of the 5 are. I did mark the technical assistance officer position. Oh, I'm sorry. These are not in present bills. I'm going back. I'm human. I made a mistake, Mr. Chair. These are within your domain. They are not currently in bills. So it's within your domain to do those 5 things, including establishing a Department of Agriculture. The governor also has the ability to do that, but we do as well. So all of those we can do. Under our second focus area, growing markets, we can do 3 of these. Unless someone wanted to mandate grocery stores do something, typically that's just a professional request, perhaps from the governor. And I didn't mark 2 and 4 because we've learned, number 2, because we've learned new information. So I'm going to quickly tell you that. We actually put into statute the State Meat Inspection Service back in 22. It has not been funded. But since then, we've learned that actually the bottleneck right now is we have 3 plants, but they're not at capacity. And so USDA is willing to foot the bill for them to do the inspection. It's the problem is we're not at capacity. And why? Because they don't have the workers they need for the 3 meat plants. What could we do about that? One of the things is by expanding the revolving loan fund and allowing meat processing plants to use that to buy equipment. There's a lot of automated equipment that they could use in those plants to get the meat processed. And once we get those at capacity, then we might want to think. I know Kenai Peninsula right now has to drive their meat up to Palmer. So, but we need to get those at capacity. So number 2, we've learned about that one. Okay, so what else is in our domain? Here are 8 more. They're not all on our domain, but I do want to give kudos to Dr. Jones and his group who looked at number 3. That's under the federal jurisdiction having to do with bypass mail. It's very important. And I didn't mark improved data collection analysis because I kind of put that on the university and ICER to do. So, but these other things, we can all have, we can fund the infrastructure for maritime and aviation. We can fund storage in some of these hub communities. As far as the university investing in research is very important, whether it has to do with logistics involving transportation or any kind of research. And I just want to make the point before you today that every dollar that you put into ag research, the university brings $9 in. So it's a really good ratio, 1 to 9. So let's think about that. These other things, again, are under our jurisdiction. So now I was ahead of myself earlier. So now I want to talk about the bills that are before, the proposals on the docket. So one of them is Senator Bjorkman's bill, SB 161, and the green check marks are the recommendations from the task force that intersect with his bill. So it does lowering taxes for farmers, you're actually giving them access to more capital to invest. Okay, and we had a particular recommendation of expanding tax exemptions, which SB 161 does, increasing storage capacity. That bill lowers taxes on farm structures automatically without any municipal action or vote. So when you do that, now all of a sudden you could have structures with more storage, whether that's to stock shelves in the store in a longer season or even for disaster preparedness. So all these things, and the blue marks on each of these bills will show you just in general why it's so good. And it's so good because it allows new entrants and extends our season, as I just said, with the farm structure storing food. And then just the basic premise, more ag production equals more local food. Another bill is by one of your own here at this table, Representative Rauscher's 251. And by the way, I took full editor's license with the titles. These are not official titles. So I call it cottage food industry / meat shares. That's not the official legal short title coming from Ledge Legal. It is basically so you know what the bill does. Sometimes I wish I could change those short titles because it's hard to tell what they do. But I took the freedom to do that here. And I'm sure you will learn more about this bill from your colleague. But it's going to expand our cottage food industry and allow meat shares, similar to what we allow for dairy. So in the two green, again, are the recommendations that intersect with our task force recommendations. And then the blue is just generally why it's such a great idea. We also have HB 282 and SB 199, which is the governor bill about state lands. It's a big bill, impacts a lot of different departments. But as far as ag, it's got a very tiny section, very small word changes. But what it would do, it would allow non-ag uses to support ag development on ag land. So, for instance, especially new farmers, it's very difficult for them to support a family starting out. And so you have to have something on the side. So if operating an Airbnb out off your property, and you can use that income then to develop ag on your property, that's a good idea. So again, the green is the task force recommendations. The blue is why it's such a good idea.
So Senator Hughes, excuse me, I just want to recognize Representative Gray has joined us. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. The one you just heard about before we spoke, HB 296, that this is a sum. You heard it on Monday, I believe, so you learned that it did these, looks like, six main things, at least in my wording. That's very simplified. And then how does that fit with the recommendations? Lots of green check marks here. So it is an important bill. I think that it is one I hope this legislature considers moving forward. The reason I put improved transportation infrastructure, you might think that one it is an odd one, but it allows shipping to be added as something for the Agricultural Revolving Loan Fund. And so you could use it to those loan fund monies for storage capacity as far as for structures for ag production. These are just in the blue again is just generally why it is so good. And investment is what grows industry, right? And that's what grows our economy. So and when we encourage investment, that's a good thing. Your reliable market one is one you talked a little bit about it earlier on 296 as far as the procurement, but that's what you're trying to create is a reliable market to get that set up over the 5-year period. So we covered 18 minus 9. So 9 recommendations are covered by the 4 bills currently on the table. 7 are not covered. So they could be incorporated into existing bills. Any of you would be welcome to do anything with them as far as amendments, if you so choose, and the bill sponsor was amenable to that and the committee approved. But these are the kind of things we can look at. I believe number one is a longer conversation, establishing the Department of Ag. I probably would not recommend that as an amendment onto a bill. But I do want to point to number two, the state research capacity. That can be a one-time component as far as money for the university and ag research. But I want to say, you know where that idea came from? It didn't come from us. It came from boots on the ground. Last year, farmers were in the building telling us they needed research. And so we are kicking some of that out off. There's some really exciting stuff. And I just want to take a moment because Jody is still here at the table for you to get a sense of how important research is and why farmers are asking for increase. And by the way, every state that has a robust ag industry has a robust research through their state university. So, Jody.
Thank you, Senator Hughes.
And please state your name again, just so we can keep track.
Yes, sir. Jody Anderson.
Thank you.
University of Alaska Fairbanks. We are working on a lot of advancements in research that are direct responses to the recommendations from the Food Security Task Force, as well as our producers. We were able to receive a capital funding last year, and we're very excited for that one-time infusion. We are now developing a livestock nutrition research program that was requested by a lot of the people who are in this room sitting behind us and many farmers around the state. We are responding to the needs in Alaska for increased livestock production and growing the appropriate nutritional quality feed in-state so we don't have to rely on the export or the import of very expensive feed. As many of you may know, our hay seasons the last few years have been very, very poor. And we've had a situation where a lot of our livestock farmers are having to make a decision of bringing in very expensive feed to maintain their herd size or to eliminate their herd because of cost issues. And that's not a sustainable forward move in terms of strengthening our food system for Alaska. So we will have this station. It'll be located in Palmer. However, it will be throughout the entire state where the benefits will have. So we're working right now with funding that came in just last year. It is a one-time infusion, and we are incredibly grateful. And as the land-grant university, our job is to listen to the needs of the people of Alaska and to improve their lives. And that's what we're doing through our agricultural research.
Thank you very much, Jody. And I also want to mention there's a relatively new discovery that, hold on to your seats because it's pretty exciting. Is it camelina? Am I saying it correctly? Camelina was grown as a cover crop up in Fairbanks last year. It turns out the amount of poundage from 1 acre, 3,000 pounds, is in some cases double what North Dakota is producing from that. And it is a very viable commercial product in North Dakota. So as Jody told the luncheon learn, the people in North Dakota are weeping because they realize the capacity that we have. And that particular, it is a seed oil plant. I let Jody correct me, but it can be used for human consumption, livestock consumption, a biofuel. It's similar to canola oil. But the fact that one of the places in the nation that is growing it, we have potentially maybe up to double the capacity, and the nutritional value of ours is greater. So that's just something new that we've discovered. Think about the peony industry that was birthed out of research at the university. So research is important, and I just want to emphasize that. You can see the other things. We've talked about them. Dr. Jones covered them. You know, the climate-controlled storage, a little bit of capital infusion to have whether we need to keep something frozen or keep something from freezing. You've got the both ends. We need those in some of our hub communities. And, of course, I think Representative McCabe's favorite one on that list is probably number 7, if I'm not mistaken. But that is really important in order to move the food around. And we have the ability as legislators to make decisions about these 7 items. So I just want to point those out to you. There have been 3 that have come up since our report as we've done farm visits and talked to farms. One of them is a farmer, if he or she has 11 workers or 10 workers, they don't have to do workers' comp. But when they hit 11, they have to. Other states have raised that limit up to 50. We could consider 50. We could consider 25. Another one that's come forward is to allow, very specifically in statutory language, to allow hemp as feed for livestock. And the third one, I think, would be a way just to show our support that we love our farmers. Other states have this. Right now, farmers, they might have multiple vehicles that they use on the farm. They have to pay for a commercial vehicle registration. In other states, they have a specific farm vehicle registration, and it's less expensive. And that might just be a few thousand dollars a year difference for a farmer, but that can make a difference over time, and that's capital that can be reinvested. So those are 3 ideas that have come since then. I want to show you that. So now it's time for you all to figure out what you're going to plant. You have a rich and ready soil, and you know why you have a rich and ready soil? Because there's tremendous public support right now, and COVID was part of that when people realized store shelves could be emptied out very quickly. You also have a 36-member task force that is standing ready to advocate for these things with you. You have 28 members of the legislature in the Food and Farm Caucus who are ready to advocate with you. And then we also have the boots on the ground, the people out there doing the work that are behind this. And this is different than some of the work that was done decades ago when we ended up with hundreds of millions of dollars spent on boondoggles. We notice we don't have any proposals like that in here. We are really listening to the boots on the ground. What are those kind of things that can help? And many of the bills that you see right now are really tweaking what's already in existence so that they will work better for those who are the boots on the ground. So with that, we'd like to yield our time, unless you have questions, to those who want to speak to you that are the boots on the ground.
Okay, thank you, Senator Hughes. We have a question from Representative McCabe.
So I actually have a couple of questions, and this is for maybe Jody, I don't know, but Saskatchewan has 3,000 years worth of potash, I think they said, and an A2A rail would allow us to import potash from them relatively cheaply. Would that be useful for us for fertilizer, or are we pretty good for that?
Through the chair, that would be amazing. A resource for an inexpensive freight moved soil amendment like potash is definitely needed. Looking at a lot of the vegetables that grow the best up here, they're very heavy potassium users, and so and the ability to get a less costly soil amendment in as a resource would benefit all of our agricultural industry.
Okay, and one follow-up?
Rep. McCabe.
Okay, so I'm really interested in hemp, and maybe not because of what you think. Hemp, it turns out, is a really, really good insulation. You can hemp insulation as opposed to fiberglass. Hemp could get wet. You just take it out, shake it off, hang it on your clothesline, and put it back in the wall, unlike fiberglass. So I'm wondering if there is enough sunlight and enough water in Alaska to grow enough hemp to be a viable insulation producer in Alaska as far as an industry. I've had this idea, and some farmers are like poo-pooing it, saying not enough light or long enough and not enough water.
Through the chair. I don't know how to answer that question for you. The university is not aligned to do the research on hemp that you're looking for. However, the Division of Agriculture is at the Plant Materials Center in Palmer. And this is where the collaboration and the division of making sure that we're doing the right work at the right place, making sure that the university is aware of what's happening at the Division of Agriculture and letting the Division of Agriculture run with that. Now, I see hemp as a great opportunity for our new livestock nutrition program. Not being able to participate in the hemp directly, but partnering with the Plant Materials Center and the Division of Agriculture is something that we could work as we move forward. I believe that there's an opportunity for varietal research and that the Division of Agriculture is aligned very well with the resources they have at the Plant Materials Center to see if your questions could be answered.
Thanks.
Mr. Chair?
Okay, Senator Hughes, and then I have Representative Rauscher.
I want to tag on to that because Jody just danced around something very well, but until the Farm Bill passes, right now we have a federal problem with hemp still, even though as states we have passed it to remove it from our criminal laws. It hasn't been totally fixed at the federal level, so she's not really free to grow and do research. However, the state is, and we've had some initial planting at the Plant Materials Center showing that it does. You know, we have a shorter season, but we have long days, and it was growing really fast, and they were pretty impressed. And we also know that hemp was being grown here many years ago in the early 1900s and was doing well. So I think there absolutely is potential, and I can tell you it is a multi-billion dollar industry in some northern climates, including in the northern part of China and in Canada. So there is potential for hemp here, and hopefully we will. That could be someday part of the research that Jody is more free to do once the Farm Bill, which we understand probably because of being election year, is not going to pass this year, but hopefully the following year. And so by summer of 2025 or 2026, she might have more freedom.
Okay, thank you. Representative Rauscher has a question.
Yeah, thank you, through the chair. I was going to follow up on Representative McCabe's question, but just to understand, because we spent about 3 years trying to get the bill passed, three or four, and then it's been 3 or 4 years, 3 years now since it's passed. And I was just wondering how many farms are out there. Has it sparked the interest, and where is that headed now? Are we getting more and more farms that are actually growing the crop, and to what extent is that happening?
I will respond to that, Mr. Chair.
Senator Hughes, please.
So Division of Ag at the Plant Materials Center reported back to us that they had never in their history, known history, had as many calls on one particular topic, one particular crop as they did on hemp. But because of the uncertainty and the changes and things not being settled at the federal level, I think it has caused some hesitation. We also had a problem where products were being made and brought into the state made of hemp that were intoxicating, and they were ending up in places where minors could purchase them. So there's been a bit of a pullback until we get that settled, because our bill and even the federal bill that did allow some pilot projects was based on weight as far as the intoxicating component, and some clever manufacturers, food processors got around that. And so we've had a problem. And so that is being sorted out. And I think that will be sorted out in the Farm Bill as well, because all the states were scrambling because of that. So I think we have not seen tremendous interest yet in actually getting hemp seed in the ground, although we do know it's happening to some extent. And Jody might not know more. The Division of Ag might know more. But I have heard from those who wanted to produce it that they're waiting until things get settled.
And one more quick
okay, follow-up,
Representative. And I just want to thank you guys for coming here. The presentation, it was excellent. Being on the task force, being on the caucus for many years now, I appreciate the way you've highlighted it and what they're doing. And if you all, I don't know, I got here 4 days before session started, maybe a week before session started. There was 3 feet of snow, and you would be amazed on how fast the stores emptied out. right here in Juneau on the things that we really needed. So people don't think that this couldn't happen. It does happen, and it happens quickly. Mm-hmm. So this is the reason that we're all here, and this is the reason that we're all working to solve the problem of security for food in Alaska. And I thank you all for doing such a wonderful job of presenting it. And I thank the FFA members here and the 4-H for coming here. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Yeah, you are going to watch sausage being made now, just that grass be grow. Through the chair, to the sponsor, to Senator Hughes, not the sponsor, but these are a lot of good targeted goals. I also join Representative Rauscher in applauding the diligence and thorough work. There's a lot of clear action items, and from my experience, a lot of these could be very efficacious. But to borrow your metaphor, Senator Hughes, there are other farmers that have fields ripe as well. These requests, these action items, all look to the state of Alaska for its policies and organizations and funding. Are there federal agencies or programs that could help accomplish some of these goals? Was that loop of consideration part of the task force? And I'll illustrate I know in terms of research, the agricultural experiment stations, extension services do research. When it comes to finance, there's USDA does crop insurance. I think some loans, some financing. Transportation, the FAA, the Federal Highway Administration help develop infrastructure. So is there a loop that we've considered how the federal government might help us accomplish some of the goals outlined in this task force report?
Thank you, through the chair, Representative Sadler. Yes, that was part of the discussion. USDA is something we actually have missed opportunities, partially because of lack of divisions of ag staff to track that and make the ag producers, farmers, ranchers available of opportunities. We mentioned the pull down of 9-1 as far as research. That's coming from outside the state. The one recommendation, of course, we're looking at FAA as far as the bypass mail and the weather stations. That could be a partnership for the weather stations that are needed. Different states have used a combination of federal funding and state funding for different things like this. So all avenues, some of these do require statute changes, and so we're the only ones that can do that. But as far as funding and opportunities, we are looking elsewhere. And I don't know if Jody or Michael have anything they want to add to that.
Thank you.
Yeah, go ahead, Mr. Jones, or Dr. Jones, excuse me.
Thank you so much. we've definitely had some conversations with some folks on the sidelines and sort of officially. I've spoken with the FAA through the Alaska Aviation Coordination Council. I gave a presentation to them on food supply chains and aviation infrastructure frictions, I was calling it. Sometimes they're very strong frictions.
Right.
FAA is in charge of maintaining those weather stations, right? That's not really within state control, but there is some potential for redundancy that the FAA has acknowledged. It's going to involve statutory movement on the FAA side, which is historically slow, but they get it. We're different. We have an entire region designation for the FAA. There are folks working with the DOT right now on technologies, for example, that could help improve redundancy. There's telecommunications redundancy that could be within the state's purview to support. Broadband is absolutely applicable to the movement of food, because if you can't get the information from the weather station, you can't do anything about it. It's a big issue. It makes up about 47% of all the outages have to do with telco. And so I think that's within our grasp perhaps, and probably within the grasp of federal dollars perhaps, as well as we have our own large broadband initiative within the state. The other thing is cold storage. We've learned through Kotzebue visits and Bethel visits that these hubs are very diverse and different. Their structures of how airlines operate in them are different. They're probably going to involve different business models based on the needs of the carriers and the needs of the communities they serve. USDA Rural Development, for example, has some restrictions on the types of entities they can grant to, for example, that could be important considerations and how those business models are set up. And so there are the nuance matters in this stuff, and it matters who's eligible to access different pots from different agencies. And so that kind of diligence to the nuance is just really important in that conversation. So thank you.
Okay, thank you for that. Next I have Representative Mears.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I may comment instead of question, I really appreciate being involved in this work. It is very meaningful in a way that a lot of this other work around here is a little hard to grasp, because there are so many folks involved in the private sector and other government entities and nonprofit industry. And there's lots of skin in the game on the private sector, as well as the opportunities to look upstream to the feds for problem solving as well as funding. And I think having a concentrated effort through a task force, of course, we're always wary of task force and is it a dusty thing on the shelf, but I think we're seeing here today, it's very much not. I appreciate these relationships, and Senator Hughes, I really appreciate your leadership. Thank you.
Okay, Representative McCabe, question.
Thanks. So a couple things. First, I would urge you to not only engage the FAA, or maybe instead of the FAA, start talking to pilots. The FAA is notoriously slow. Their AWOS stations and ASOS stations are notoriously bad because of how they're connected, whether it be internet or telephone, or I think some of them still use a dial-up modem. For you kids back there, that's what we used to have for the internet. So pilot groups, Alaska Air Carriers Association, Alaska Airmen's Association, some of those might be better off. Personally, I don't use ASOS or AWOS anymore. I go right to the DOT cameras that are closest to the village I'm going to, and I look at the weather on the camera. So second thing I have is, and Senator Hughes and I have talked about it before, I don't see much of it in here, is transferring the vet, the state vet, to the Department of Agriculture.
And I will comment on that, Mr. Chair. Is that okay?
Yeah, of course. Senator Hughes, please.
If in our Department of Ag white paper, we recommend the veterinarian, and there may be some discussion with DEC, but we believe that needs to be under the Department of Ag. So all the things involving livestock production are under one roof. So, in the white paper. And I just want to say, because I know you need to bring up the other folks, and I don't know if there are more questions, but this is my last chance to say something. If you look at the task force report, as Representative Muir said, this was not designed to collect dust. And what we did in part of the instructions that we gave our focus areas is tell us what the recommendation is, but give us the action steps, the timeline, the resources that we have, the resources that we need. Does it need a statutory change? Really trying to make it very user-friendly, with the idea that this stuff needs to happen, and it's not going to happen overnight. It's going to take persistence over time. And I'm really grateful that right now we do have a momentum and we are riding a wave, but this is going to take a number of years if we're really going to get where we need to go. And again, that I'll tie that back into establishing a Department of Agriculture. That's one reason why that would be helpful, because they would carry that vision forward. But the whole idea is not just to give you a report and go away, but it's for actually to get us things across the finish line this session, next session, and as we need to do so, as far as the things that we in this building can do to allow this industry to remove the obstacles and really let it grow as much as possible.
Okay, thank you, Senator. Representative Baker has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, first I'd like to say thank you for the report. I was lucky enough to be able to be the driver for the group when they came to Kotzebue in December. And go through the different air carriers, go through the different facilities, and really engage in the conversation. Dr. Jones, can you expound on some of the roadblocks we saw in Kotzebue specific to not being allowed to inspect infrastructure?
Oh, right. Yeah. So,
Representative Jones, through the chair, if you would. Dr. Jones, I'm sorry.
Thank you.
We'll get your titles straightened out here by the end of the meeting.
I ask students to call me Mike. It's not very formal, which is why I have trouble with protocol and saying through the chair. Yes, Kotzebue was fascinating and beautiful. You have a beautiful community in Kotzebue, and thank you so much for your willingness to work with us hand in hand and literally drive us around. That would have been a tough walk. So, you know, some of the issues we saw in Kotzebue had to do with actually going back into the hangars themselves. A lot of carriers were quite willing to let us back and sort of understand the freeze and chill infrastructure. Those are the two main categories. You keep it freezing temp or 33. You can keep it in the hangar. It's about 45 to 50. But there's a lot of regulations, you know, not regulations, you know, best practices that show you get a lot more shelf life in an official chill unit. The post office called ahead of time and asked us not to go back. I have found out since that the post office was correct, actually. We were a bit taken aback in the moment that we thought it was sort of a protectionist kind of thing. It turns out I talked to Dan Kinesic, actually, at the Air Carriers Association meeting. He went and testified, actually, on the record in the Food Waste Committee. They couldn't even bring Peltola's team back into where the mail is carried. It turned out that was actually on us. And I've since talked with some folks. And so that is actually going to be a roadblock in understanding some of the hub infrastructure, and it's going to emphasize the importance of dealing with the carriers and having them be willing to share information if we're not able to go back into those areas themselves. And so I appreciate you highlighting that. Because again, I was very taken aback and a little disgruntled, but it actually turns out that they were in the right, and so that is what it is, unfortunately, frankly.
So am I to understand postal office security was the reason you couldn't go into these facilities?
It has to do with...
You weren't quite clear about what exactly, why.
If I may, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative.
So as we went through, we would go to each of these air carriers. We would go into their front office, essentially, introduce ourselves, talk with management. Some of them were kind enough to allow us to go into their hangar space, but they all prefaced by saying we were called by the post office, and we cannot allow you to inspect any of the bypass mail that we have. They allowed us into the space. We couldn't take any pictures of the mail. We couldn't touch any of the pallets. We couldn't stand within so many feet of pallets of bypass mail, which includes a lot of chill and food.
Okay.
So that was the in-the-moment hang-up of people coming all the way from across the country, across the state, and no one really explained why. It was just the post office said no.
Well, they're the most powerful force in the universe is the U.S. Post Office, so you guys should have known that.
Through the chair, there are apparently regulations and statutes surrounding mail proximity that I personally did not understand, and no one was attempting to start any rules.
Okay, any other questions? I think we should move on then. So are there other folks in the room that wanted to say anything on these subjects? And
Yes. And as I depart the table, I will move to allow these chairs. So we have Amy Seitz, who is Executive Director of Alaska Farm Bureau. So she's got the boots on the ground lined up, as you can see the slide, testimony from boots on the ground. So I'll hand it over to Amy. Thank you.
Okay. Ms. Seitz, please put your name on the record and your affiliation and begin your whatever you're going to do next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Amy Seitz. I'm the Executive Director for Alaska Farm Bureau. And I'll figure out what I'm going to do next as we move forward.
Okay.
First, I just want to express my appreciation to this committee, to Senator Hughes, to the rest of the task force. Food security, obviously, for Alaska Farm Bureau has been a huge deal for many years. And it's so exciting to see the interest and attention that food production has been receiving. And hearing the task force report during Food Security Week and having it be a report that is not meant to get dust. It has action items, it has clear action items, and it has a way that everyone can work together to expand our food security in Alaska and diversify our economy. So following the task force report, we do have the boots on the ground, and we have a small representation of our food system, but we do want to, since these are topics farmers and food system members have been talking about for a long time, we want you to hear from them. So first up, we have Scott Muggeridge, and I'll let him introduce.
I just would remind you, we have about 10 minutes, and then we have to stop, so keep her moving.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and there are probably way better people to speak besides me, but I'm going to bore you for a couple more minutes. It's been my short time here in Alaska, and I appreciate all the effort the committee will put up. But this momentum we've got going right now for agriculture is what I've been trying to do and get the needle moving ever since I've been in Alaska. I come from a very diverse operation. I've owned a livestock auction. I own a large commercial feedlot in Nebraska. My daughters are still down there with that business. My son's here in Alaska with me running this operation. We currently move the most pounds of beef or any protein meat of anybody in Alaska. And we could do so much more. There is no, that the potential, the untapped potential here is unbelievable. I couldn't even get my head around numbers. It could be to say to further expand on that, this momentum and what we're doing and what you folks have available to you to set into movement, we have the ability to do it right the first time. The lower 48 is dealing with the messes they've made for the last 100 years. Integrated operations that exist in the lower 48, there's no real income for the right people. You know, the people doing the work, the boots on the ground there, they've got a job working for Costco raising chickens, or they've got a job working for Tyson raising chickens, or those integrated operations are not what we want to see. And right now, they're starting to be, since COVID, there's starting to be this focus on how much of that are four companies that are foreign owned in control of, and nobody, you know, the general public wasn't aware that four countries that are all foreign owned were basically controlling 85% of the food supply in the world, not just this nation, the world. And this state, being almost a country of its own, has the ability to do things right and not have that foreign ownership come in here and develop an integrated operation. But they have the money, the ability, and the labor force to do it. So I want you to, you know, dig deep and try to put forth this effort by ourselves before someone takes advantage of it for us.
Okay, a question, Representative McCabe.
So thanks. I am really curious because you're the cow guy, right? The cattle guy.
Yes, sir.
So if we had a rail spur that ended in Port McKenzie and you could put cattle in a barge, could you get them to Kodiak? Although I know Burton has a ranch out there, but places in Western Alaska, maybe on a barge, or either as cattle on the hoof or as sides.
I believe so. Yes. My current operation, we move our sides of beef, from Homer to Fairbanks. They're available statewide. I've moved beef to the Southeast. You know, Alaska Airlines comes into play. I've moved beef to the villages. It's all a very, very diverse and available. Yeah.
Follow up. So,
Representative McCabe.
Thanks. So how about outside of Alaska? Could we be a net exporter? I mean, are you big enough? Could you be big enough if you had the transportation to be a net exporter of grass-fed Alaskan wonderful beef?
Could be big enough. You said the exact word. Could be big enough. The bottleneck is the infrastructure.
Transportation.
Before the transportation, it comes the slaughter facility. The facility has to be there. And, you know, the automation that's out there today and stuff in a new facility would be, you know, because labor is a big bottleneck there. And we understand that and know that. But the automation that has come along now, a housewife once worked a few hours a week could run some of these machines and never get dirty. And so the potential is outstanding. If you started a larger scale program where there was those protein meats moving through a larger scale slaughter plant, right off of the bat, you would be looking at about a 30% export because the Asian markets will buy the higher end quality cuts and the lower end cuts and give more for them than we will in America. So there's export potential right from the very start.
Thanks.
Okay, I think we need to leave some time right for our younger testifiers. So who is before us now?
My name's Aspen O'Connor, and I'm 13 years old.
Okay. Did you say Aspen O'Connor? Aspen O'Connor? Okay, you speak into the mic a little more loudly. It's okay. We talk loud in here, and it's okay to talk loud because we're all old and we can't hear very well. So, Aspen, please tell us where you're from and who you're representing and what you'd like to talk about.
I'm from the Butte, and that's right outside of Palmer. And my mom's the executive director of the Alaska Farmland Trust. And I go to two schools, Matsu Central and Palmer Junior Middle School. And I'm going to talk about why I think it's important that the youth are into farming and know more about it. Because farming has been a big part of my life since I was born. And my mother, my sister, and I own a Crooked Fence Farm. And we've raised sheep and dairy goats for maybe like 12 years. And as a young farmer and someone who represents the next generation of Alaska's farmers, I support creating a department of agriculture. Recently, one of my schools, Palmer Junior Middle School, they wanted to start an FFA club, and they had the students decide whether or not the club would like continue or not, and the students shot it down because most of the students don't realize that most of the food, all of the food we eat comes from farms, and they don't understand that. And I think by housing the future farmers of America under the Department of Agriculture, we can ensure that students like me remain connected to the food we eat and learn valuable skills to build future farmers in Alaska. And over the last few years, especially since the COVID-19 pandemic, I've come to understand just how critical food security is for Alaska's future. Creating a Department of Agriculture is a very important step in making sure we can farm, ranch, garden, learn, and eat. It is important for young, new, and aspiring farmers like me that the state listens to this recommendation. In doing so, I can grow up knowing that agriculture and the land and the people, like my family, who work so hard to feed our communities, are supported and funded and given the importance they deserve through a new Department of Agriculture. Maybe you'll see me as an intern in the next few years. Thank you.
Okay, Aspen O'Connor, well, thank you very much for your kind words. I want you to know I grew up on a dairy farm, so I think we have a lot in common, and I like food, and I like to eat food, so we're going to take your recommendations very seriously. So thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone else? We probably have time for one more, I guess.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Amy Sides with the Alaska Farm Bureau. We do have, I think, Nick Mangini online, but I think he gave his testimony earlier. So we do have one more in the room, Colin Peacock.
Okay, Colin. Yeah, Mr. Peacock. So please put your name on the record and your affiliation and give us your short testimony.
Thanks. Colin Peacock. I live here in Juneau, Alaska. And I work for the Alaska Food Policy Council. I'm a regional food business center co-director, and I mostly want to speak to my time starting a food hub here in Southeast Alaska, the Salt and Soil Marketplace, and some of the challenges that we face that these recommendations could help address. One of the number one issues we had, we grew so many small food producers, farmers, gardeners, fishermen, mariculture, you name it, we did it all. And they got to a certain point where they ran smaller grocery stores, our online farmers market, and then they tried to get into larger grocery stores, and they'd try to go through sort of hoops to get in. You know, they'd go through product trials, they'd send things off to be studied for the nutritional data, and then they'd be told, okay, well, you've done all this, you can get in, and then they didn't get in. Or sometimes they say you have to be in the ordering process a year ahead of time, and then they didn't get in. It was a major barrier. We end up losing food producers that way. So one of the recommendations is to mandate potentially a certain amount of local food on grocery shelves, you know, whether that's the answer, or actually just having the governor's office prioritize asking retailers to put local food, Alaska-grown food on shelves. This is one of the most proven ways that I have seen to actually grow food production from a smaller scale to a middle sort of size scale. And then eventually, you know, that's the only way we get to larger scale local food production that's more diverse. We need more food on the markets, on the grocery store shelves. Another major one is in terms of research. I know the most prolific producers here in Southeast Alaska, and all of them have relied on research of crop style, crop studies, varieties, you know, different sort of studies that allowed them to choose these things that they never would have had time to test themselves. So I would ask that we fund, you know, agricultural research, you know, through ideally a Department of Agriculture. That would be ideal, since that hooks in so many different things that would affect food producers, especially farmers, throughout the region. And lastly, I just wanted to say marketing was a huge part of this. You know, part of the job is helping these people that don't have time to market themselves. If we actually had a stronger marketing department for agriculture in Alaska, I can think of a few things that would help them more, because that's what they don't have time to do when they're growing their business, and it's not what they're experts in. So, yeah, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Peacock, very much. Very good comments. So we'll bring that portion of the meeting to a close. I just have a couple other announcements for the committee. Amendment deadlines for Senate Bill 92 dealing with submerged lands. The amendment deadline is Monday, February 19th at 12 p.m. That's 12 noon. And then HDR 20, which deals with the NPRA, amendment deadline Monday, February 19th at 12 noon. Okay, so seeing no other business before us today, I want to thank everybody for your attention. And we will adjourn at 2:59. Thank you.